Beyond Radley. Business, careers, and more. Virtual talks by experts from our community.
So good evening and a warm welcome to our latest Beyond Radley Talk, our virtual talks programme featuring experts from the Radley community. This time around, we're focusing on a topic that's becoming increasingly relevant and exciting, that of living and working abroad. Whether you're considering a gap year, exploring international career opportunities, or simply curious about life beyond the UK, tonight's session is designed to give you real-world insights from those who've taken the leap and built lives and careers in different parts of the world. Now, we're fortunate to be joined by a panel of three old Radleyans who share their personal journeys, the challenges, the rewards, the unexpected lessons they've learned along the way, from navigating different cultures to building networks overseas. Their experiences will offer practical advice and inspiration for anyone thinking globally about their future. And more people are, we know this. So I'm now going to introduce you to our lead speaker this evening, Justin Webb. So Justin is the founder and executive chairman of AgriWeb, the world's leading livestock and food systems software platform, used by over 20,000 farmers and food producers to manage over 200 million acres across 25 countries, digitizing operations, tracking emissions, and enabling sustainability at scale. Justin's journey has taken him from Sea Social Boy, to the Australian Outback via Harvard and Oxford, where he studied economics and applied mathematics. Before founding AgriWeb, he founded, built, and sold three companies, including two hedge funds, each acquired by Macquarie and then Westpac, and founded a $4.5 billion wealth management firm in Papua New Guinea. He also ran a 60 billion Australian division for BlackRock. Alongside his work in ag tech and sustainable food systems, Justin serves on several international boards and continues to advocate for innovation that marries productivity with environmental progress. Please join me in welcoming Justin Webb. Over to you, Justin.
Look, thank you so much for having me here, especially amongst such young and esteemed fellow panelists. It's rather concerning when one looks at your Radley date, and you see that these gentlemen left not one but nearly two decades after you crossed over the Gordy date. But nevertheless, it's a great pleasure to welcome with me James Cunningham and Harry Behrens, who I am very excited to dig into a topic that's been really pivotal to my experience since Radley. Taking the opportunity of living abroad, of changing your location. For some, that is so pivotal and life-changing. It spawns where you work, who you marry, who your friends are, what you do, and life experiences that stay with you until the very end. But at the pointy end of decision, it can look incredibly intimidating. It can be something that makes you think twice, and often it's the path less taken because it can look dressed up as fear and intimidation. So to part those interwoven bushes and discover that path, I want to join and ask first James to do a bit of background and introduction on his experiences of traveling around the world. And then Harry, and then we're going to whip through a few sort of prompted questions that these guys have clearly adamantly prepared for, as though they were ready for their A-levels again in 2011 and 12. So over to you, James. We'd love to hear a bit about you.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the introduction, Justin, and good to be with you all tonight. Hopefully, even in my limited range of experience compared to you, Justin, I'll be able to add some insight on the topic. I left Radley in 2017, did a couple of years teaching and then joined EY in the apprenticeship program. I'm currently living out in the Netherlands, but have also been out in Australia and started my career in London. So looking forward to sharing the insights with you.
Thanks, James. And Harry?
Perfect. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me today. I'm just looking around a few of the names. Seems like more of a family Zoom call than a sort of webinar. So hi, Mum. Hi, Dad. I joined and Uncle James I joined in 2011 and then left in 2016. In 2017, I went on a gap year, which took me driving from London to China. And that was kind of where I dipped my toe into the moving abroad, working abroad, well, living abroad. I then joined Exeter, studied economics, and really wanted to go into banking. But having been rejected multiple times, multiple banks, I thought that potentially was a sign. So I signed up to Amazon, where I started in an operational startup in London, loved it for 4 years. And then with Amazon, most recently, I've moved to Australia, which seems to be a common trend amongst Justin, James, and myself.
Well, Harry, while you've got the conch and have just walked through some of your background, I mean, what does moving abroad look like? You know, you're standing on the precipice of greatness or great failure, depending on your perspective. So, you know, for those that are either online now or will be watching this in the future, to in a serious context, you know, uproot their lives, move to the other side of the world, change language, change friends, change visas, everything. What does it look like, and why do that?
Yeah, when you put it like that, it seems quite scary as a concept. But I think what the most worrying thing can be the unknown element of it. There's a lot of things that you need to figure out. There's a lot of things that you need to research before moving. But again, moving countries is very different to different people, and why you move is probably different. So but for me, I'd lived the London life for 4 years, thoroughly enjoyed it. But after a while, it became somewhat monotonous and repetitive. So the reason I wanted to move abroad was for a change of scenery, push me slightly outside of my comfort zone. I'd also done 4 years in my role, and it was time for a bit of a change. So it depends on the purpose of your what you're trying to achieve. For me, it was just being slightly uncomfortable, moving to a slightly less intense world. In terms of preparation, again, to break down the slightly daunting element of moving abroad, the sooner you can start figuring out what visas you need, what requirements you need, it becomes slightly less daunting. And then what I will say is, personally, as soon as I made the decision to move abroad and as soon as things started moving, it becomes a very quick chain of events before you eventually move out into the country. So whilst you're thinking about where you want to go and why you want to go there, do also just appreciate being where you are now, enjoying the friends that you have and the family you have, because moving abroad will take you slightly further away from them. So sort of wrapping it up, moving abroad is definitely an adventure. It's a really fun one. And to help yourself understand what needs to happen, just do a little bit of research, figure out your why, what's your motivation behind it, and it'll become a lot easier to understand.
That's great, Harry, and appreciate your candor and your honesty in that. I mean, one of the things, because we've got such a broad audience here, old Bradleyans who are much further on in their career, and right down to current Bradleyans who are considering, you know, what's the next step. And you know, personally, when I went to go to university in America, it was not the done thing at Radley. You know, the aspiration was always to get on the Oxbridge board in Covered Passage, and the very thought that you would do anything but that was abhorrent. But the concept of going to America, you know, create an incredibly interesting paradigm. And the different just thought processes of a lot of those undergraduates, for me, I didn't know that when making the decision to go to American university. There were more family motivations and et cetera, but it was what I uncovered once I'd got there. And so the reason why I share, or at least my own reflection in there, is you can make a plan, and you know, in the words of Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. It's, you've got to get over there and really indulge and get involved in what there is to offer. And I think that beyond that, there's also many different paths to take, right? Right now, there may only be the opportunity to go, you know, it looks like the only opportunity to go abroad is university. But as James, and to turn the mic to you, you took a slightly different path, didn't you, when embarking on your international journey?
Yes. Yeah. So for me, to be honest, I didn't really commence that path, even looking to go abroad when I left school. For the slight change was obviously the going on the apprenticeship program with EY, which at the time was pretty unique in terms of my cohort of leavers. I think the stats were there about five or six in the whole year that didn't go on to university. And for me, I felt I wasn't immediately ready to go to university, and didn't have a solid understanding of why I would want to go and make that investment in yourself. So had that period of time, 2 years kind of working, teaching, playing sport. And then, yeah, started that EY journey, where you still do a master's degree and a chartered accountancy status in the same time it would take anyone else that had been to university to get there. The international working environment only really came on the scene for me after a couple of years of being in that environment and starting to see the opportunity. But certainly something when I realized what was out there, I wanted to take it.
Well, I think that's great. And so, okay, James, now here you are overseas, and how do you integrate into new cultures, communities, you know, social life? Like, how do you make it your own?
Yeah, the integration's a big thing, because as Harry said, it is a real change, and it can feel daunting, but the quicker that you can find that routine and sense of normality, then that really helps adjustment. Now, we've mentioned already just a little bit of preparation in terms of trying to set yourself up in the way you're going, where you're going, understanding a bit around that local culture will help. I was very fortunate that when I did it, I was moving to play sport as well. So immediately you have that group of very similar minded people in a kind of club or competition environment that you naturally have that social circle pretty much pre-built. Despite that, I wouldn't say you have to do it with a group, or you can go alone, but I would strongly encourage that you adopt the like just say yes mindset. Now, there's obviously lots of caveats, but you want to make the most of the opportunity you're at while you're out there. You don't want to do too much too quickly, but really make a positive effort to break that bubble and immerse yourself, even though it can feel daunting.
I think that's great. And, you know, as from Tyson to William Blake, right? If the man who stands still breeds reptiles of the mind. And so, you know, with that piece, the challenges, sailing far from shore, it does incur the fear, the risk, and if at its very core, the homesickness. So how best to handle that? And as one looks at these challenges at any age, and I might add, right, I sort of at first drew it to Radleyans looking at taking a step abroad in, you know, upper sixth or recently having left. But right at the other end of the spectrum, people can be looking at making a life change, going and doing postgraduate study, changing their careers. And the same trepidation can and will enter into their minds. So from your experience, how do you prepare? And also, how do you get engaged with what's in the school, in the new place and or at Radley as a school to really help you out?
Yeah, well, being away from home is something that lots of Radleyans are used to pretty consistently. I personally love the kind of boarding environment and never struggled with that. Though I think you can be homesick, but I think the harder thing actually is that fear of missing out, because particularly when you're so far away in a place like Australia or New Zealand or America, the time zones can really challenge how you stay in touch with people. And it's not a case of you can just pop back every now and then when there's a big important event that you want to attend. You are going to miss things. That is a reality. But it's, again, what are you exploring and making the most of that you would never have known or had the opportunity to do so? So you have to reframe the kind of challenge at times and go, what am I doing today that no one else has got the opportunity to do? And I think that's quite a positive thought. I would strongly encourage people to keep that kind of anchor at home, not least for friends, family, events, but also that professional network. If you're working abroad and you don't know how long you're going to be there, you may be there on a 2-year secondment, you may be there shorter, you may be setting your life up for good, it still stands true that at some stage you're going to need that relationship back to the UK or wherever home is for you. And that can still be really powerful, because half of challenging yourself to go abroad is to really build your understanding of the world, not just to shut off to one new place.
And James, one more for you before I want to come back to Harry for a few of these, is your personal journey brought that to life, right? Yes, you went to Australia, but then there were other opportunities that stacked on top of that could well have not have come about had you not taken the first step to be out of your comfort zone at home. So bring what you just said to life a bit with, you know, your own personal experience.
Yeah. So I guess for me, part of going abroad as a kind of career proposition was, I've got a passion for the kind of professional services and business of sport world. So previously, having built relationships and worked on several bits in our sports advisory practice at EY, we had teams down in Melbourne that were delivering specific engagements that gave me that opportunity. On top of that, the kind of sporting environment to step off that bridge and go and play in another country then led for an offer to go and play in the Netherlands. And that was one kind of aspect of it. But the other piece was then having the international career experience. And as part of that kind of return package that I had set up with EY, they wanted me to take on the chief of staff role to our EMEA FSO COO, so chief operations officer managing the financial services business in that area. So Europe, Middle East, Africa and India. And part of the big reason for that was I'd seen a completely different style of culture and working and understood how disconnected it could feel to be in a place very far away from a global headquarters. And I genuinely don't think that would have lined up had I not taken that first step and built those relationships, as well as staying close to people back home for the kind of semi-future planning.
That's great. Thank you, James. So Harry, back to you. What do you wish you'd known before moving, that either about the place or that known about yourself that you ended up discovering while you were there? Let's get deep.
Oh, crikey. I think I'm quite okay being uncomfortable. And I think, like, I did use a little bit of network in Sydney before I got there to make sure that I, you know, wasn't spending weeks by myself. Caroline, big plug for RadSock, but also there are other social media outlets out there as well. But yeah, I think being uncomfortable is something that I wasn't particularly good at, having lived near Oxford and then went to Radley and then went to Exeter in London. There's nothing too adventurous there. And just being able to network again, it feels weird having to make friends from scratch at age, what am I now, 27. But what I found really quite enjoyable was that in these countries, wherever you're moving, everyone's in the same boat. Everyone feels slightly uncomfortable being out there. Everyone's probably having the same sort of feelings and emotions of being away from home, being away from creature comforts. So you can kind of find solace with other people. From that uncomfortability can come some really fun experiences that you wouldn't be having in London. So these are things you can't really plan for, but you get somewhere, you figure it out, you learn to be slightly agile or adaptable, and you end up having a great time.
That's great. Thank you, Harry. And I had to put you on the spot about learning yourself in front of your parents on this call. So well done. So a couple of great questions coming through that weren't previously scripted. Caroline talking about, you know, old Radleyans, recent or not, who might be looking at jobs abroad. And in this case, for a first job out of uni. I think the three of us will all concur to move to a country without any kind of job link will make it considerably harder. Not least because a lot of countries that you move to, and apologies if the next 5-10 minutes get a bit dry, but there's a lot of practical necessity when you're moving abroad, right? Working visas, being able are very different from being on a short-term tourist visa in most countries that you're looking to get get employed in. And so it is unquestionably easier to get a job, you know, here in London, if that's home or wherever home is, and then seek to be hosted with a group abroad. It doesn't mean that when you're there, you can't then look into other opportunities that may exist if you really enjoy it. It also retains what I think has been a pretty constant thread through what we've talked about, right? You do want some kind of lifeline and a link back to home. And so, you know, how to get these jobs, right? That's the next question. And to look at that. So Harry, you know, if you're coming out of Radley, let's focus at the nearer term piece for the moment.
Mm.
Coming out of Radley, how do you start filtering companies that have international offices or ones that are most open to posting new hires offshore? How does one even start in this space?
Oh, well, not really sure, to be honest. If I were a new OR, though, what would I do? I think is a fair question. But two things. One is global companies. You know, get yourself into a global company. Speaking from experience, Amazon is a huge job market in itself. You can do anything at Amazon, and you can also be anywhere at Amazon. That's not why I joined, but it's a nice perk of working for these large companies. They will send talent to anywhere that talent really wants to go. So that's the option if you're slightly schemey or planned and want to go into a large company to take advantage of them. Not that that's a bad thing, but there's also the option of not going with a company, which, as we've said, it is probably the harder option, or going with no experience. But having lived in Sydney and having had friends move over without jobs, it's not impossible at all. And one thing that I've had to learn when you move to a new country, you don't have this natural sort of network that you do have in the UK. And that's a skill that if you're going to move abroad without a company or without a lot of history, you're going to need to really utilize and practice is your networking skills. Specifically in these other countries, if you can do a little bit of research, connect with one or two people, it will make your life a lot easier when you get to that country in order to find something that's useful to you. So if you're clever and planned, try and move with a large company that's got access to these offices across the globe. But if you're feeling adventurous and slightly risk-taking, I think that's an amazing motivation for wanting to move to another country. And it's not the hardest thing, but it does make it slightly harder, and you'll just have to network more.
Well said, Harry. Building on that, I think that the whole paradigm of moving offshore should open new channels for where you end up. I mean, certainly Caroline mentioned this in a very kind intro, but I had zero intention when sitting in the donut studying under Gary Wiseman that I would be building a business in Papua New Guinea. But you know, there's no way that would have opened up if I hadn't gone to Australia and spent time in Singapore and Hong Kong. And I think that's also, if there's a takeaway from listeners that have either joined or watching this later, it's that these portholes open once you are in a different place. And the network that Harry's talking about building is what opens this incredible adventure that almost everyone has. And I think if my sentiments would be home, and I now have come back to live here and home. Home it will be here, and home will be comfortable and familiar and welcoming. And you will be all the better for it for having taken that journey. So for however long you do consider it, it's pretty fantastic to take. So James, to you on a little bit of some of the drier stuff, in no way throwing you under the bus because you're working at EY, but you know, from positioning oneself, taxes, healthcare, you know, the stuff that you need to get done. Is there anything I challenge you to try and keep anyone engaged by answering that holistically, but at least, you know, what are some of the checkpoints that people that are listening here or will be later might want to make sure they get done in preparation? So at least it's taking some of the pressure off, you know, that element of fear and prep.
Yeah. It's certainly a little bit drier area of the conversation, but really important in terms of helping you settle and make it as seamless as possible. I'd echo that kind of break the bubble philosophy that Harry's alluded to. And in doing that, you are building your network. So whether you're going down a formal route with on a global mobility program with a global firm, or whether you've taken a bit more initiative, maybe a bit more risk or a shorter term view, it's still really important. In a larger business, you've obviously got more structure around you and more support teams, whether it be tax, well-being, business travel, all things that can be a bit more constructive. But I kind of say it all comes down to people. So build your relationships with that introduction and then use that local knowledge. The things I felt, I got there and I was surprised I needed to sort straight away was my mobile phone doesn't work, which when you've got no bank cards or you're so reliant on things like Apple Pay, you can be thinking that might be a bit of a problem. So set yourself up a SIM card. And if you're working in a overseas territory, you're more than likely going to need a bank account in that country to be able to get paid into, because that's quite a common tax law. So those are two really fundamental things I think you could go and nail on day one or potentially even before. The next thing would be check registration. So do you have to register with a municipality or a state or a federal government type body? And again, to do that, you're likely to need to have some sort of either permanent residence contract signed or be living at a place where you are physically able to register for a short term through that address. So those would be kind of three things I'd say check straight off the bat. And the longer term tax considerations come down the line when you start earning, and hopefully you've got an employer as well that supports you there.
That's great, James. A good effort at bringing this to life. It's the boring but important stuff. And you know, some of these elements you will find yourself seriously battling if you do land in countries. And you know, we've talked about sort of perhaps more familiar, comfortable landing pads, and the insinuation of a lot of our discussion thus far has been, you know, English language, Western, you know, these issues, hopefully goes without saying, but if not, like, double down when you're in non-English speaking countries, or if, especially if you don't speak the language, different legal frameworks and ones that don't recognize or have to have physical documents. So, you know, yeah, boring, boring but important, worth checking a lot of this out, really worth checking this out, not oh, I'll do a quick Google before I head to Heathrow. You know, really spending time about how you understand, how are you going to get your feet on the ground? Because it will just make that landing pad so, so much easier. So bring it back a little bit. Oh, sorry, James, you're more
to that. Yeah, I'll just say maybe one more thing on that, which just the physical documents comment made prompted a memory. One thing I found useful is actually before you go, basic fundamental documents that you'd have in the UK, whether it's stuff like any savings or any national insurance numbers or registrations, if you can put those in a folder and give those to a trusted person, whether it be a parent or a sibling, whatever, that there's almost a certainty at some point you need to do something from overseas with something you had back home, and that can be quite crucial. I know lots of it's digital these days, but occasionally web browsers and stuff don't let you log in.
Yeah, that's good advice, because Harry gave his bank details and savings to his family, and he's now going to have to stay in Australia forever. But let's bring this back to RadSoc and the Radley Network more broadly. I certainly had some fantastic experiences, both myself reaching out to and others reaching out to me, which perhaps starts to state my, or shame my age. But you know, what have been both of your experiences? You know, short and sharp around, and Harry first of the Radley Network, not just through RadSoc, but also your own classmates, and then the second derivative, the second iteration of friends beyond that, putting you in touch with people, and also having the conversation with other Radleyans who are in similar spots to you. You know, did you get value from it? If so, where? And if not, what value would you have loved to have got from it?
Short answer is yes. I did use the Radley Network to get some connections. The McGregors, who said they were going to be here, I'm going to shout them out so that when they watch this back, they'll know that they were missed. Put me in contact with someone in Sydney, and I always used to speak about the slightly odd concept of going on friend dates with people who you didn't know, and you would go to a wait at a bar and sort of look around sheepishly for someone whose face you wouldn't recognise, and they'd eventually turn up, and you'd wave at them and say, "Right, we're going to be friends." That's the kind of value that I got out of the Radley Network. I tried to leverage the Radley Network efficiently rather than in large quantities, and picked only a few people to go and see, mainly because I wanted to try and be slightly uncomfortable and make my own friends out there. But it's surprising, and I'll be quick, Justin, because I know we've got time. Once you yourself move abroad, it's funny how many other ORs, friends, colleagues, whatever, come to you with questions about how is it, how can you do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So once you put yourself out there, experience it, you soon become one of those people that will be connected with.
That's great. Thanks, Harry. And James, similar or different?
Similar. Similar. Didn't actually really use the RadSoc network in generating the moves.
I'm sorry, everyone. James has left the call.
Am I still here? Or? yeah. But I did use it once I was out in country to see who else was out there and what people might be doing. At first, just a very basic search of Radley for Life and LinkedIn, see what interesting profiles you might find, because, as you say, when you step outside the bubble, you really don't know what you don't know, and those doors will naturally open, and then it's for you to choose where you want to go.
And on this subject of choice and autonomy, I mean, Caroline put in put in the line of questions. And I do encourage everyone to throw in more questions. We want to make this quite interactive. And if you'd like to put it in chat or raise your hand, because it would be great to hear from you as well, is, you know, what do we think, what skills and jobs do we think will be most useful when looking to go offshore? To my mind, when it's got to be looking at, one, where do you want to go first? And then two, looking at what skills are lacking or at least light on the ground in that, in that space that you're going to. If you're just kicking off your coding experience and you therefore decide that you're really excited to move to Lahore in India, and it's your plan to go, you know, immediately land a job there, it's probably unlikely. There's quite a few that are out there, versus, you know, some of the opportunities to take unusual skill sets to places that don't necessarily have them, and make yourself a rarer commodity, I think I've seen, or at least in my experience, has been something that's really driven the more ready doors that when you land. And so with that in mind, I mean, James, as COO of a lot of, you know, of a large area of the EY business, there's a tremendous number of people that run through the organization. You know, what are you seeing from the job market needs and where young ORs can upskill and or bring their skills to a most fertile area or ground?
Yeah. I guess the job market varies region by region and local macro factors as well. I think something that I would suggest is going to be really valuable is the mindset, particularly when you go abroad, and having that purpose of why you're doing it and what you're looking to take from it. That adaptability and resilience is going to stand in really good stead as we continue to navigate really uncertain and unstable situations globally.
Well said. And Harry, million plus employees at Amazon, you guys must be missing out on something. Similarly, and in a serious sense, what skill set can young Radleyans really be driving to be at the forefront of big tech and some of their global expansion?
It's not a simple answer to that. However, like something that's common across tech, big companies, you know, successful businesses, is adaptability. And I think that's one of the key skills that anyone needs to have, regardless of whether or not they want to move abroad. Being able to react to change in a fast moving environment, which is ultimately the world we live in now, is such a useful skill. And one which will be definitely be tested if you move abroad, because things are different and you can't just be the same human in a different country. You do have to change somewhat to adjust to their cultures, etc. Having said that, Australia is not too different to the UK, so I haven't really been tested too much. And then the second thing is more of a mindset, which is just say yes. Obviously, respect your boundaries, talking about sort of time boundaries when it comes to work, but the sort of Radleyan, yes, sign me up, optimistic kind of attitude will take you a long way in a lot of these companies. So positive mindset and be adaptable, I think, would be my two key skills.
That's great. And Richard Green, who kindly has joined the call as well, he mentioned a few minutes ago that he picked up that I certainly didn't have the foresight, perhaps, of where I would end up or the journey I would go on. Do you think that looking back on where you guys are in your more recent times, having left Radley, is that a seed that is readily planted while you were at Radley? The opportunity to go abroad, and not just for great, I'm going to go row at Princeton. But looking beyond that, which by the way is pretty great, but looking beyond that from a, I'm a student in and considering the opportunities, or a recent leaver and, you know, there was this club or this talk at Radley that really opened the channel for me. And if not, perhaps this webinar is it.
No, there was no seed planted was the short answer. I really enjoyed time at Radley. I didn't even envy people who went off to the US universities. I was obviously very happy for them, but I was quite happy going to Exeter, having a great time. The thought didn't really pass my mind until about 3.5 years into Amazon, when I thought, okay, well, this is kind of getting sort of monotonous. Let's see what other opportunities are out there. And then it moved extremely quickly. So I wish I could say I had thought about this, but I hadn't. Kind of just wanted a little bit of a different experience and somewhat adaptable journey to reach my goals, and that included going to Australia and learning a slightly different culture and having a great time. James.
Well, as this was Guido's question, no, the seed hadn't been planted. And I kind of wish I'd broken the bubble earlier just to get outside of that Radley life. But there were a couple of instances. I think there's a few nights in Treviso that Guido probably remembers relatively fondly, that I thought actually the different perspective and living and playing sport abroad would be a really cool experience at some point to do, because it's different, but it's also so welcoming at times. Yeah, there you go, Guido. Hopefully you know the ones I'm talking about.
Or hopefully not.
I couldn't say.
James, you use an interesting phrase there. And as we come towards the end of this, I want to make us all feel slightly uncomfortable, right? The concept here is we are talking about pushing outside of the comfort zone. There are all of the upsides and the attractive things that are hopefully over the past 45 minutes or so we've really unpacked. Opportunities, networks, friendship, building new skills, all sorts of facets that enrich someone's life, and you can hope to have. But we talked a bit at the beginning about the intimidating element. Let's acknowledge that, you know, Radley can be a bubble, and it is important to recognize life outside of that bubble. And going abroad removes that safety net and that bubble almost entirely. The exposure across socioeconomic fabrics, because you just don't know and understand what those structures are when you land, is a forcing function for you to have to develop a new understanding and a new mindset. And I personally think that can only be a valuable and enriching experience. And, you know, with that, I'd love to hear some closing thoughts, from Harry and then James. Really pulling on some of the topics that we've talked about, we started out here by wanting to at least table the Radleyans living, working abroad. In 90 seconds, what's your pitch to really compel, the next three or four people that listen to this webinar to make the jump, and also to how to do it, I guess?
Well, I might reposition the question. Instead of asking why, why not, especially at our age, a group is all together here. Sometimes there are periods of in your life when your responsibilities are significantly less. You can choose to go to London or wherever you want to work in the UK and just continue working there. But you're going to do that I assume once you get older and you have things slightly holding you back, it's a great opportunity to set yourself apart from everyone else, to be able to have a few interesting stories to throw around in an interview, and to be uncomfortable by moving abroad. All of those things are amazing. And having been to Radley, gone to London, it does feel very comfortable. And if you want that, that's fine. But why not? Why not challenge yourself? Why not get something somewhat interesting to say about your early life, your early career? And at that point, you can afford to make a few mistakes or a few hiccups or be unemployed for a little bit of time. It's absolutely okay. So why not?
I've really not got too much more to add to that, Justin. I was going to just say exactly the same. You are potentially viewing it as removing a safety net. But again, like, what does that really mean? Most things can be undone, you know, and if it doesn't go well, it's not like the UK is going to have changed significantly. Yeah, I would say go and make the most of it. Do it at a time when it's feels right for you and you know the why behind you're doing it. But it's also a fantastic opportunity at that moment.
Thanks, James. I see, Mr. Hudson, you've got your hand up as well. Was that a question on this?
Very interested. I'm a much older generation than any of you, perhaps 50, 60 years older. And what is interesting me, you've been all working abroad rather largely in the English-speaking world. I went abroad and have been working abroad for practically all my working life, retired now 20 years ago. But no mention anywhere by you of learning foreign languages at school or anywhere else. I presume because you're largely in English-speaking world. I did French and German A-level at Radley. I then had 2 years off national service. That was obligatory military service in those days. I was one of the last ones, during which I happened to learn Russian, which didn't actually stand me in great stead in the future. But I had a very interesting experience arranged by a Radley Don, Douglas Burks, did an exchange with the German family when I was, 15, 16, which set me off and developed my personality quite a lot, and managed to, I was at Oxford New College, not a very good degree result, but I got a job abroad and worked abroad for the rest of my life, using French and German mainly, picked up other languages too, like Dutch. I worked in Hilversum with Radio Netherlands English service in those days. And then I went to joined the United Nations in Nairobi, United Nations Environment Programme, and then that came to an end, and I came back to England unemployed for 6 months. Then I got through a previous professional contact, job with UNHCR in Geneva, United Nations High Commission for Refugees, always in the news nowadays, much worse than it was in my day as regards refugee numbers and so on. But that was terrific experience for me. And I went abroad, I worked again in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, Nairobi, Kenya, Khartoum, Sudan, and traveled all over Africa, as you, Justin, probably have done as well. But in a humanitarian role, not as a journalistic role, although having worked in radio for many years, I was quite good at escorting journalists like Mike Wooldridge around the refugee camps of Africa, and then being a spokesperson for the UNHCR in various places, being able to answer questions which I would otherwise normally have put. I got quite good at that as well. So that's just briefly, but just to go back to foreign languages, none of you mentioned any foreign languages at all.
Well, Mr. Hudson, I mean, I think that what you've demonstrated is what you've demonstrated so perfectly is the value of, you know, the Radley network. The three of us, Harry, James, and I, focused on English speaking countries because that was the experience. I mean, aside from perhaps Pidgin and as you mentioned, some African countries. But I think that you are a great advertisement for those who are seeking to go abroad and engage in foreign speaking vocations. That may well open doors to travel. And quite frankly, I'd like to extend the webinar by 2 hours and have you pad out the entire story that you just told in 30 seconds, because it sounds fascinating. But with this, thank you for making yourself available, if indeed you are, to all of those in the RadSoc that are thinking of going abroad. Because what a, frankly, if you don't mind me saying, what a treasure, how amazing it is to be able to understand your experiences and hopefully adapt to some of our own and some of our listeners.
Good, thank you.
Now, dare I say, Hugh, you've also made it incredibly intimidating for anyone else to volunteer a story or a question, because I doubt they're going to one-up that. But if you would like to, please, any questions, and thank you, Marcus, who also offers 5 years in Germany and willing to help. You know, I think this is one of the great things. It's a little bit probably like sitting in class in Radley. Very few people will put up their hand to answer the question at the beginning for fear of either getting it wrong or being spotted to put up a hand. But once everyone else does, everyone's on board to help out. So, with that, thank you so very much, Caroline, for having us. Thank you so much to all of you who have taken time in your afternoon and evening to come to listen, join, and hear us sort of dribble on. I think that we hopefully, and I'm including Hugh in this, we hopefully can be great advertisements for the success story of facing those challenges that I discussed at the top of this, and don't go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path, and leave a trail behind. And with that, thank you so much, Harry. Thank you so much, James. Thank you so much, Hugh. And Caroline, back to you.
Oh, thank you, Justin. So thank you to you, Justin, and of course, Harry and James. That's absolutely brilliant, really fascinating. I think for those who are on the fence and not knowing what to do, perhaps if you're a bit younger, this has been really encouraging and motivating and will help people to think through whether or not they do move abroad or not. And indeed, Harry, as you said, why not? Quite tempted myself. So we will have another Beyond Radley next term, but for now, it's over and out. And thank you all so much for attending. This will go out on our communications as well if you want to watch back. So thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thank you for joining us. Check our channels for the latest news and events from the Radleyan Society.